Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a wet spring day in Fort Worth, Texas. Today I welcome back to the show author and meditation and mindfulness teacher and practitioner, Darren Coburn. I talked with Darren about his excellent first book, Being Present, last year. And today we look at his new one. It's entitled Living a Life of Harmony, Seven Guidelines for Cultivating Peace and Kindness. So it's a pleasure to have Darren back on the show. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's good to be back. I had a look on my Skype just now, and I think it said it was 9 months ago when we talked last.
Is that right? 9 months. Wow. Yeah. I remember I think I was on vacation somewhere where we did the show. I can't quite remember, but I had the book with me, and I said to my wife, you might want to read this. It's really good. And she devoured it. She thought it was wonderful. So excellent first book, lovely second book. What I like about Darren's writing, if you're listening to this, is that it's number one, it's systematic, it's clear, and it's eminently practical. And I think we need that these days. You know, it's nice to have philosophy, but we want to put feet to our philosophy. And this book certainly does that. So I walked away with a box of tools and skills that I can put into practice in my life. And I've been on the spiritual path for decades now, but there's always something interesting and new that you can embody, or a different way of presentation. So, and we're going to talk about the presentation of this book in a second. Darren, you talk a lot about the process, or process, as we say in America, in this book. What do you mean by the process?
Well, we're all parts of a big universal process. So everything happens for a reason, cause and effect. And as humans, or as a human being, we're like a process that's taking place within our body. So we're born and we do stuff in our life, and we pass away. And inside the body, there's a very complex process that's taking place, and it's always shifting and changing. We're never quite the same. So human beings, you can view human beings in terms of the form of the human being as a process. There's obviously the spirit or the essence that goes with it, but that's another discussion. And everything else is a process. If you think about how you came onto this interview that we're having today, and there was a process that you followed in order to do that, and this discussion that we're having now, this communication, that's a process. And when I got up this morning and made myself a cup of tea, I was following a process. And all these processes take place at different levels. You know, you could see the earth as being a process, and it was created, and it's going to be sustained for a while, and at some time that will pass as well. So that's like a big process. And then inside the earth, you've got all these other smaller things going on. So the processes, they're all linked together, and they take place at different levels. And even if you're a scientist looking down at an atomic level, at something that might appear to be relatively still, there's a process taking place in that as well. And then you go into the atom and get into more detail and more subtler processes underneath there. And it never ends, you see. The scientists, they keep going down layer after layer after layer, deeper and deeper. And they'll never reach the bottom because the process is it's got an infinite depth, and it's also got an infinite scope. I believe that there's no beginning or no end to it. So it's fascinating, really, isn't it, when you think about it like that?
It is. And, you know, some people fall into the trap of relativism. You know, well, it's a process, everything's relative. But it's not exactly like that, is it? Because there's certain universal principles or laws within this process that we can tap into that give it a sort of a kind of structure, you know, without it being limiting. And the other side of the process for me is, as the Buddhists say, you know, impermanence, right? Everything changes, everything's impermanent. We tend to see that as a bad thing, right? We're going to die and all that. But death is part of the process as well, and so is impermanence. And we can give thanks for that, because if things didn't change, if things weren't impermanent, if everything stayed exactly as it is, you know, number one, it would be extremely boring. And number two, there would be no room for it all, because, you know, that we have to have this flow, this continual decay and rebirth. And the Hindus, of course, talk about it a lot, don't they, in terms of the you know, gods like or goddesses like Kali, or the destructive side of the god, you know, which is about transformation and dissolution, and then the creative part that arises out of that, the phoenix out of the ashes. So it's all part of the infinite possibility, I think, of the universe, you know, that the fact that I can change, right, that everything changes is a total blessing.
Yeah, everything's changing, and you made a couple of really good points there around how well the Buddhists describe and work with the process, because they're very much of the opinion that things are conditioned and everything's linked together and everything's impermanent. So the Buddhists have really grasped that. But the other thing that you said I resonated with as well is actually there's more to it than that. So there is this process, but interestingly, there's something that sits behind it. There's an intelligence there, or a presence, or a consciousness, or God, whatever label you want to give it. There's something behind the process that drives it all. And we know that that's the case because there's like rules of the game. There are certain things that work and there are certain things that don't. And that's certainly the case for human beings, isn't it? Even if you look back hundreds or thousands of years, there's certain things that when a human being behaves in the right way and follows certain guidelines or plays by certain rules, then they find that they're psychologically at peace and their life's more in harmony. If they do the opposite and they're unskillful, that causes psychological stress and harm. So behind the process and all this stuff that we can take in through the senses and that we can experience, there's some intelligence there, and we don't know really, we can't really explain it or define exactly where it is, but there's intelligence driving the process. And I think our job as spiritual practitioners and to be the best human beings that we can be and have the best time whilst we're alive is to tune into that intelligence. And there's various ways that we can do that and then follow the guidelines that the intelligence is offering us. And these guidelines have been documented in various ways by various different religions and philosophies. But what you find is common threads and themes, and they do tend to point in the same direction. So I agree with you that there's more to it than just the process. I believe that this intelligence, or there's something behind it, which is directing it all and which is responsible for its creation.
Right. And the interesting thing about the process is that, You know, you can use the same process to limit yourself or free yourself, right? If you apply the law of cause and effect in a negative way, if you're only thinking negative thoughts all the time, you know, usually that's going to lead to not such a happy conclusion. Whereas if you stay relatively optimistic and open-hearted, then, you know, you attract that. So it's the law of attraction, I guess. We draw into our lives that which we're focusing upon. So in a way, the universe or God will give us anything we want, right? You know, it says in the Bible, Jesus said, God is no respecter of persons. You know, God sends the sun and the rain and good and evil alike. And what that tells me is we're all given this gift, and it's up to us then to use it wisely or to use it, you know, in a selfish, limiting way. So again, what, you know, infinite possibility of choice there. Yeah,
it's what you say about being optimistic and positive. I know the discussions that we've had listening to you, some of your other interviews, and also talking with our mutual friend Richard Anderson, who's also an author of a book, Mind Spirit Detox, which is, I think it's just coming out in the UK.
That's
over
right,
the next few
yeah.
days this week. And we met last week and we was talking about how positive and optimistic you are. So there must be a way that you do that.
Well, you know, I should say, first of all, that, you know, you can be overly positive, right? You know, every day and every way it's getting better and better. You know, there's sort of throw an affirmation on it and everything will be okay. You know, positive thinking in that way. I don't subscribe to that because sometimes life sucks, you know, and sometimes there is horror in the world. Not sometimes, there is. And so to always have a gloss of optimism or positive thinking could be unhelpful, you know, it's sort of a form of denial, right? But what we're talking about, I think, in the true positivity is that, you know, no matter what's going on, there is still the opportunity for grace and compassion and for something larger to come forth. We see this in tragedies, you know, when people gather around to help, there's always a huge overflowing of willingness to help. Well, that's the beauty of the positive coming through even in the most negative situations. So I think we're talking about that. We don't want to get too simplistic about it and make it seem like a sort of a Pollyanna thing, you know, just slap an affirmation on it and all will be well. But that's interesting that Richard should think of me in such a light. That's good. Of course, he's listened to my shows for many years now, and that's how we met, actually, and a lovely guy. And yeah, he's got a new book out. I hope I get the opportunity to talk with him about it on the show. He lives in Devon and very close to where you are, Darren, right? You're in Dorset, I guess, right?
And right. Yeah, not too far away.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's what you just said there when he said he's seen you in the light. Maybe that is a secret.
He's what? Say
when
again.
When you said he's seen you in the light, or he's seen you in that light, maybe it's the light.
Yeah. That's it. Who knows? Yeah. Just don't, you know, as they always say, never believe your own publicity, especially if it comes from somebody else, you know. So we're all very humble beings on this planet, and the best thing we can do is empty ourselves and acknowledge that it's, you know, it's the spirit within us that does all the good things, right? Once we start claiming anything for ourselves, we got a problem, I think. And we see this over and over again, unfortunately, with spiritual teachers, and as well as worldly teachers and worldly power brokers, you know, that they start to believe their own publicity and end up in terrible states. And unfortunately, so often, you know, we start worshiping the spiritual teacher. One thing you say in your book is that you've never done that. You know, you've studied Buddhism and yoga and other modalities, but you've always kept an independent spirit, which is probably a healthy thing, right?
It is. You know, I think even if I was committed to a particular religion to the point where I became ordained, you know, if I became an ordained Buddhist in a particular movement or an ordained Christian, even with that complete commitment there, I would still, the independence really that I gain is through spirit and is through that for me, a direct connection with spirit or a direct connection with God. So I think whilst you can commit to a particular religion, and it's the same in a relationship, isn't it? Or a marriage or something, you make a commitment, but you are committed, but in a way there's still a spiritual independence there, which isn't dependent upon form. And I think to be successful within a particular religion or, you know, spiritual organization, or to be successful within a job or a relationship, that spiritual independence and that higher connection needs to be there. Otherwise, you can end up getting lost in what you're committed to, attached to it, and then that's where the suffering can begin. So I'm sure that, you know, even people that are doing really well within particular religions have got that spiritual independence and freedom. I think you need to be able to experience freedom, don't you? You know, if you commit to something, it shouldn't feel like a prison. It should feel like you're free. And if things start to feel like you're trapped and you're in a prison, then the relationship with those things needs to be looked at, and sometimes you have to move away. So for me, I always check in, you know, am I experiencing freedom? Am I experiencing happiness and peacefulness, and going back to those basics to try and guide me as to the right direction? But yeah, my path's been pretty much independent so far. I've been in and out of different philosophies and, you know, religious movements and organizations. I said to Richard last week, I keep an open mind. You know, I just take, you know, each day as it comes, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
Exactly. Not my choice.
Yeah, absolutely true.
Yeah.
Was it Groucho Marx that said, I wouldn't want to belong to a club that would have me as a member? And there's something to that. You know, some people are just unclubbable, as we say in Britain. I don't know if that's a phrase we use in America, but I think Americans understand it. You know, there's people who love joining clubs, and others that just feel too independent-minded to be part of the club. And, you know, sometimes the spiritual path can be a club too. You know, we're in with the latest people in the latest, you know, movement, whether it be Buddhist, Hindu, or Christian, or whatever. And sometimes you have to walk away from that, you know, and be independent of spirit. Ken Wilber actually had a quote the other day on Facebook that I liked, and I guess somebody put it up, and it was basically, you know, all this striving for enlightenment is kind of funny, because, you know, who's striving? It's the ego striving, and the ego will never achieve enlightenment, you know, because it's not in the nature of the ego. Enlightenment is already present, and so we just have to relax and let go. Well, that's independence of mind, you know. As long as you feel that somebody can give you, or some book or person can give you the enlightenment experience, then, you know, you're going to be chasing up the wrong tree, you know. It's not going to be found that way. And I think part of the spiritual life is just to relax and laugh, you know, enjoy, because it's all here. It's as it is right now, you know. And once we wake up to that, we kind of have a good laugh, don't we? Because realize, oh my goodness, I was searching so hard for something that was so natural.
yeah, that's right. It's all here in the present moment. And as you say, the ego gets in the way of things. And sure, even in my situation, where I will sometimes label myself as being spiritually independent, I'm sure that there's aspects of ego associated with that as well. There's probably a bit of arrogance, a bit of fear, certain, you know, views and things that I'm identified with. The ego is really sneaky, isn't it? It's a little bit like the devil. It pops up everywhere, and it catches you out. You don't even know it's there sometimes.
That's right, you know. And really, I think the ego is, you know, the devil, as become known in Christianity, at least, you know, is just a form of the adverse ego, right? It's not really an entity in and of itself, you know. In unity, certainly we don't accept the personification of evil as the devil, you know. It's simply aspects of our own unresolved issues, you know, that yeah, they trip us up, they play games with us, and they seem to be our best friend, you know. The good thing about the process is, you know, like you said, it's endlessly renewing. The Sunryo Suzuki Roshi, the great Zen teacher, wrote a book or a series of essays called Not Always So. And this is great advice, you know, not always so. It's the impermanence again. You relax into that, right? It's the same as George Harrison, you know, his beautiful song about everything changes, you know, all things must pass. It's the same idea. We only fear it when we want stasis, when we want to be a little ego that's safe, you know. Well, the universe is not safe in that regard, right? We have to let go in order to find true safety.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think true safety doesn't come from things, does it really?
No.
And it doesn't come from form, because yeah, it can be very enjoyable sometimes and very pleasurable, but ultimately it's going to change and it's going to let you down. Whereas, you know, spirit or the formless or our essence and being with that, you know, that provides for me like a 100% 24/7 service level. It never changes, it's just always there solid.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it makes sense just to kind of stay with that, really, whilst you're navigating all this stuff, you know, while you're navigating the process.
So to
stay connected to the intelligence and the presence that's responsible for it all.
So you have seven ways to do that, right, to stay connected. And they're interesting because they're not there's some of them that you think, oh yeah, well that's I've come across that before in my reading, or my study or my whatever practice. But others seem a little different. And so let's just sketch them out, and then we'll talk more about them in the second half of the show. But here's the seven guidelines that you provide, and you go into some detail right on each one. And what I love about this is the built-in redundancy. So you'll talk about, you know, one guideline, and then you'll have a summation of it at the end, and then you'll have a chart that shows it. Then you'll also do it in a negative sense. You have a positive way of presenting it, and then the negative version. And it's, you know, so that, so you got to get it, you know, regardless of how dense we are, that there's something, because you've built in that repetition, which I like. But we've got honor the body, which is interesting. It's number one, because so often we in the spiritual movements, we kind of say we've got to get beyond the body. But here we're honoring the body. Be present. Act with kindness. Let me see. I can't read my own handwriting here. I'm going to go to the actual book. Act with kindness, considering everyone and everything, understanding the truth, communicating it selectively and skillfully, do only what needs to be done, harmoniously obtain and retain only what you need, apply the guidelines to your digital device usage. That's a good one. That doesn't usually pop up in spiritual books. So these are the seven guidelines. We've got a few more minutes before the break. Give us an overview how you came up with these seven.
Well, over the years, I've studied and been involved with different religions and philosophies. So these seven are really a synthesis of the guidance that you get in Buddhist teachings, in yoga philosophy, insights that I've got from studying Eckhart Tolle's teachings, and my own personal insights and ideas and from my own experience. So it's all of that synthesized together. And what I wanted to do was come up with a list of seven guidelines that basically covered everything in terms of how to act and how to live in harmony within the process as a human being. And I wanted to make them very simple and straightforward to understand. I accept that they can be a challenge to practice consistently, but I wanted a simple list of seven guidelines that people could memorize and store, you know, in their minds, and then apply them day to day. Because I'm sure that you'll agree with me, some of the other lists that you find in other philosophies and religions, they've got the substance and the integrity there, but they're not always like simple and straightforward to get your head around. So I wanted this list to be accessible, you know, to people that may not have the time or the inclination to go deeply into a religion or a philosophy.
Right. Yeah. Good. The chart that you have is, you know, circles, and in the center, of course, is the circle of being present, which makes sense to me because, you know, if you, and I think you mentioned that in the book yourself, if that one guideline was followed, you know, wisely and skillfully, then everything else would fall into place. And hence your first book, you know, was focused exclusively on that particular theme, that particular subject. And so everything arises from that, doesn't it? From our ability to be present to what is at any given time.
Yeah, I think this is essentially what this is about, is mindfulness, being aware and accepting of your experience. But what I encourage people to do if they can is to add to that, so you get the mindfulness, but then an openness or a faith in what transcends you, and in a way to allow your thoughts and your communication and your actions to be guided. And you can only really do this when you're mindful, because when you're lost in thought, you lose the connection to spirit. Or the connection's there, but you can't quite access it. But when you're aware and your mind's peaceful, if you can open up and have faith that this intelligence there which can guide you, that's where the true power lies, the true spiritual power.
Right. Yeah, very good. Folks, I'm with Darren Coburn. He's written a new book. It's called Living a Life of Harmony, Seven Guidelines for Cultivating Peace and Kindness. And it's published by New World Library, I believe. And Findhorn Press and Inner Traditions. And you can get it in all the usual outlets. Well worth getting. Darren, before we go to the break, give us the connection to you, a website or whatever, if people want to find out more.
Yeah, my personal website is Darren Coburn, and Coburn is spelt like the port, like the drink, C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N. So that's darrencoburn.com. And I've got another website, which is full of free mindfulness and spiritual teachings and trainings, which is from myself and friends. So that's a really good site to go to if you want some training content, or you want to listen to some teachings. And that's mindfulnessonlinetraining.org, mindfulnessonlinetraining.org. And there's a podcast on there as well.
Excellent.
You can subscribe to.
Okay, we're at the break. Join us again. We'll talk about the seven guidelines when we get back after these messages from Unity.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
When listeners like you contribute to Unity Online Radio, you're making a positive difference in your life and the lives of other spiritual seekers. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate to make a one-time donation. Or sign up for monthly contributions. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Reverend Wendy Craig Purcell from Unity San Diego, discussing change and transition.
And as we begin to really identify the endings in our lives, to deal with them completely and wholly, to heal from them as we must, as we are willing to be in a time of not knowing, a time of uncertainty, but a time of trusting that there is a blueprint, there is a plan, there is a destiny. As we move successfully through these experiences, we will find that we are evolving and emerging into something new and different. And everyone and everything that has been happening in your life, both the things that are easy and good and pleasant, and those things that are challenging and painful and difficult, are drivers for your own evolution.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit unity.org.
Since 1924, Daily Word has offered inspiration and practical teachings through daily prayer messages to help people of all faiths live happy, healthy lives. The magazine includes 2 months of daily affirmations, messages, articles, and spiritual poetry to help you get inspired. Subscriptions are available for print editions in large type and Spanish, as well as the digital subscription package that includes the online magazine with audio, smartphone app, and daily email. Get your subscription today. Visit dailyword.com or unity.org.
If you've been on a spiritual path for a long time, what can you read that's new and exciting? Try Unity Magazine. It's designed for the seasoned spiritual student, with in-depth articles and interviews about spiritual practices and philosophies. Our columnists share their own faith journeys and cover healing, science, and psychology, with even a little scripture thrown in. You'll read some classic authors and some new ones. Get a free trial issue at unitymagazine.org.
More and more people are interested in a vegan lifestyle, and the numbers continue to grow. Join Victoria Moran every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central for Main Street Vegan and learn how to make the shift to help animals and the planet. Each week, Victoria shares recipes, health tips, and interviews with celebrity vegans, experts, and activists. Learn how to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Right here on Unity Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Darren Coburn talking about his new book, Living a Life of Harmony. And in it, he provides seven guidelines for cultivating peace and kindness, all very practical, all very real world. And I gave you the outline of them in the first half, but here they are again. Honor the body, be present, act with kindness, and considering everyone and everything, understand the truth, communicating it selectively and skillfully, do only what needs to be done, harmoniously obtain and retain only what you need, and then apply the guidelines to your digital device usage. So on your body, you know, the present world sort of does that. You know, there's yoga studios in every corner. We're encouraged to get fit, even though we're a nation of obesity. And that's true in Britain now, as well as America, I think. And yet, so often we abuse our bodies, don't we? Hence the obesity, I guess. So honoring your body is grounding us in the most precious gift we have, right? Is this physical form.
Yeah, it's this physical form that we've been given by the creator of the process to take us through the process. It's like our vehicle. So it needs to be, for that reason, it needs to be honored and it needs to be respected. In my opinion, it's a gift from the creator of the process. So it's looking after that gift. And part of honoring the body is the condition of the body, but it's also the relationship that we have with our body. So the condition of the body covers off the basics like diet and sleep and exercise, and it also covers off things like getting enough relaxation. And I know that a lot of people are so busy these days that they don't have an opportunity to relax the body and also relax the mind. So it's about relaxation, so that the basic guidance that we get. But then we can't guarantee that the body is going to be in a particular shape or form. You know, we can do our best to honor it and respect it and condition it, but ultimately, it's going to go in a certain direction. And for most of us, at one point or another, we start to have problems with the body, and the body naturally degrades. And it's for that reason that we need to have a positive, accepting, kind relationship with our body. So part of this guideline is saying, whatever condition your body is in now, within this present moment, that is how it's meant to be, because that's part of the process. So it's a waste of time trying to deny that or believe that it should be different, because it's not. That's how it is. And then whatever condition the body's in, I encourage people to express gratitude for the body being in that condition, and to continue being kind to the body and to be accepting of the body. Because a lot of people cause themselves psychological stress because they're resisting or rejecting psychologically the condition of their body. And if we want to influence our bodies positively, the best way that we can do that is from a state of acceptance. So relationship with body is so important.
Unfortunately, we live in a world, don't we, of celebrity and airbrushing and perfection, you know, where we're supposed to attain these unattainable standards of bodily perfection, right? And that we live in a world of comparisons, you know, where I'm comparing myself to someone who always looks better than I do. We're sports fanatics, so we look at these super toned bodies and think, oh, I'll never reach that. But it's doing the best that you can do, right? Self-acceptance in that regard. As I grow older, and you know, I'm 66 now, it's become very, very important to me to maintain some kind of physical activity, you know, because I know that if I don't, that the aches and pains will, you know, start to take over. So you got to be in control of them, you know, rather than they're in control of you. So, you know, daily exercise is important, but also self-acceptance. You know, I can't do the things maybe that I could do in years past, but I can still do a whole lot. And what I can do, I do. I took up camping again recently, and you know, after many years, I used to camp a lot when I was younger, but I actually loved it. It was great, and it was great exercise because you'd have to bend down into the tent and etc. So it's good to keep these things going. I think stay active is my advice with the aging process.
Yeah, there's definitely a link there into kindness. So you know, I believe what you're doing there is you're being kind to your body. And for me, kindness, if you break kindness down, what's kindness about? Well, kindness is about being considerate. And for me, it's about being friendly, and it's about being generous. And if we apply those principles to our body, then we're going to be in a much better place to be able to follow the rest of the guidelines. And that's why honor the body is at the top of the list. And this is why, you know, like the yogis, for example, they put a lot of time and effort into this. Some of the religions and philosophies don't go into honoring and respecting and conditioning the body too much. It's interesting, isn't it, how when you look across the different religions and philosophies, they have different strengths, and they emphasize different things, but they all, or most of them, cover everything. I know that you know, when I go to church, there's never a discussion or any training on meditation. And when I go and spend time in a Buddhist temple, I never get any discussion or training on prayer, but I believe both for me are necessary.
Right.
You know, and I think it's a wonderful thing if you can keep an open mind, because I believe that some people are following certain religions, but it might be that the needs that they have are actually covered off in a more emphasized way in another religion or philosophy. So I think it can be good sometimes to go out there with an open mind and go and get what you need rather than being constrained to your own religion. I think religious people need to be aligned with their religion that they're committed to following. But I like the idea of complementing that with other practices and respecting other practices and other ways of doing things. And well, fortunately, we can do that these days, can't we? You know, with the mobility that we have and the internet and the access to knowledge and information, you know, we can reach out and get things that we need to help ourselves, even if it's outside of our particular religion or philosophy that we follow.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think churches, for instance, understand this to a degree. They have yoga classes and whatnot. So because people are yearning to get connected in that way, and it's complementary to that tradition, right? I had a wonderful sociologist on my show recently, Dr. Tricia Bruce, and she was talking about the fact that there's a resurgence of the Latin Mass in Catholic churches now. You know, that it was swept away with Vatican II back in the early 60s, but people want to start chanting in Latin again. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is, you know, it's the numinous. We want to be connected to the mystery. Just because you don't understand the words, it's okay, because it takes you away from your intellect trying to work out what it all means to the heart, to the intuition, where you're giving yourself, you're surrendering to something larger. So I think anything that expands our ability to understand what the wonder of being alive is a good thing, right? It's essential. I want to skip being present because we covered that a lot in the last show. And folks, if you want to find out more about being present, tune into that show with Darren. It's in the archives, and I think it was about, as Darren said, 9 months ago. Let's move on, because we already touched it. The idea of kindness and consideration. And of course, part of kindness is being kind to ourselves, right? We can't really be kind to others unless we have self-acceptance for our own being.
Yeah, we need to start there and take responsibility for being kind to ourselves. And what we was talking about earlier, relationship with the body and kindness to the body is an example of that. And kindness to our own minds. So like we relax the body, we can relax the mind. We exercise the body. We can exercise the mind. And taking a kind responsibility for the minds, for our minds, and for the way that we think. So there's kindness to ourselves there, but then the kindness also needs to be, and it needs to kind of pass outside of our bodies to other people and other things. And this is where it gets quite interesting, because if you look at the process, and the process is infinite, where do you direct your kindness? You know, how can you prioritize where you invest your energy and your resources? So in a guideline, I say act with kindness, considering everyone and everything. So I'm encouraging people to do what's right for the whole, necessarily, you know, rather than what's right for their ego. I think the only way that you can make sure that you're investing your energy into the right thing is to be present and to allow the intelligence that's behind the process to guide you, because I don't believe that our minds are complex and are powerful enough to be able to do that prioritization. You know, we can think things through to a certain extent, but when it comes to, you know, where you apply your energy and resources, there's like a billion and one things that you could do. And especially because we're more mobile, we're all connected, we're all in communication. You know, you can be kind to someone on the other side of the planet in a second. You know, the limits are the opportunities are limitless these days. So I believe that the only way you can prioritize is to allow yourself and surrender and allow yourself to be guided.
You know, the interesting thing is with the process is if you have an understanding of the process a little bit, and the interconnectedness of everything, you know, we're all part of the same puzzle here, then that yields us to an understanding that, you know, my suffering is also your suffering is mine, my kindness is your, you know, we're one, right? We're all in this together. And so to foolishly think that, you know, just my little sense of self is the only thing that matters is kind of sad, you know, because we're giving up the you know, the palace for the palette on the floor, as the image goes. You know, we're living in the master's or the king's great palace of wonders, which is God's universe, and settling for something small and mean. You know, the more you understand, the more you want to be magnanimous, you want more, you want to be helpful to others, it seems to me, right? Because you're doing yourself a favor, you're remembering who you are, you're the infinite, you know, the one.
Yeah, it's when you describe it like that, it's really straightforward to understand in theory, but it's a real challenge to practice, because I don't know about you, but if I'm completely honest with you, I'm always trying to be as honest as I can on, you know, within boundaries, interviews like this. But if I'm being completely honest with you, you know, a lot of the day I'm lost in thought with basically me at the center of everything.
Yeah.
And every now and again, it's like I wake up. And then I connect, and then I feel like I am that one consciousness or essence. And then I believe that I can act skillfully and prioritize what I'm doing and where I'm investing my energy. But if I'm really, really honest with you, a lot of it's just about me.
Yeah.
It is. Well, and I think I'm on my own, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There seems to be this this link between when you get lost in thoughts, this is when you're not mindful, when you get lost in your own thoughts. And it's always about you, always links back to you. It's like you're right at the center of the universe. It's you, and then there's everyone and everything else around you, and it's all happening around you.
Right, exactly, yeah. Well, see, there's the key right there, is start to laugh about it, you know, because the minute you laugh about it, then it's no longer got you by a stranglehold, right? Because the not being aware of it is the problem. It's not that we have ego, we have annoyance with people and the different things that happen. It's when we're blithely unaware that this is actually just the machinations of our humanness, right? The minute we can see it for what it is, then you freed yourself from it, because there is that witnessing a part of us, the presence that can look with compassion on that stupidity, and laugh at it. So that's the key. It's not that we got to be perfect people, because that'll never happen. It's that we see ourselves more clearly, more perfectly, so that we can just laugh about it, because as long as you're in human form, it seems to me, that we're always going to have that difficulty, right, of identifying with the body, identifying with the thoughts, with the preferences that we have. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with preferences. I like a certain kind of food, my wife likes something else, but when I make her wrong and me right, then we got a big problem there. So
I think that the once the awareness is there, and like right now this second I'm present and I feel connected, but I know that at some point later today that's going to change again, and I'm going to get lost in thought and it's going to be about me again. And this is why friendship's quite important, because what you can do is if you have a good enough relationship with someone, if you believe that person is lost in thought or they're being self-centered, you can call them out on it in a positive way. And this is what you did to me. I'm sure you can remember this a few months ago, because I sent an email out to a number of people basically saying, can I have? So I wanted something, and I wasn't really considering the people that I emailed. It was a very transactional, I want this, can you do this for me? And I didn't quite see that at the time, and I sent it, and even afterwards I didn't realize what I'd done. And then if you remember, you then sent me an email back, and in a friendly way, and it didn't feel very comfortable, to be honest with you. It felt really uncomfortable, but it was needed. And you said to me, well, maybe you could have done it this way. And I mean, you didn't tell me that I was being self-centered and that I wasn't being that considerate or friendly, but you didn't need to. But you just you just fired something back at me, and that it woke me up basically. And I thought, oh gosh, I can see what I did just then. And I think when we can do that for each other in a friendly way, that's helpful. This is why I think it's so important to have spiritual friends, and people that you have that kind of relationship with, because we're all a team, really, aren't we? When you look at it spiritually, we're a big team, aren't we? We're all evolving together, and we're all going to be skillful and unskillful in different ways. And so friendship for me is about supporting each other, and I felt although it felt like I'd been shot at, because I know it wasn't your intention, it was helpful. And I know that behind that was kindness and consideration. He was being very generous doing that, so I really appreciated that. So I just wanted to share that little example. You don't always have to do it yourself,
The thing about something like that is, it has to be used very sparingly, I think, because if you start being, as you said, you can't be too honest sometimes with others, because they're not, number one, they're not ready to hear it, you're not their teacher, what right do you have, etc. So it's very, it's a knife edge to sort of try and do that. But if a person is ready to hear, if you know that they're got a deeper connection, then sometimes you can say things, and it becomes a teachable moment, right? But I think, some people just blithely go around telling people what they think and what they think is right for them. And that's not really helpful, So it has to be done in a very gracious way, I think. We don't always know, if we're getting it right. But I think it's evidence that, you're willing to make that shift, right? That you're doing enough work here on yourself and willingness to expand into a larger awareness that you could take that, even though it was uncomfortable. It was only uncomfortable to our humanness, right? We were caught out or something, it was, and then we get defensive. But to the spirit, the spirit's fine. So and you were able to move into that direction and use it as a a teaching moment, which is testimony to you, I think, that you could do that. So this is what we're all looking for. It's not what happens. It's how we respond to it, right? How can we take it as grist for the mill, as something useful?
Yeah, it's very wise advice that you're giving there about being careful about like telling people what to do. And I think before giving anyone some feedback or sharing something with someone, it can sometimes be helpful to stop and ask yourself, you know, what is my intention here? What am I actually trying to achieve? If I'm being, you know, really honest with myself. And the advice that I give to most people is actually not to advise. And I know you didn't advise me. You did it in a more skillful way. It was more, you know, putting a mirror up. But I think when you advise someone to do something, it's a little bit like you believe that you're God, isn't it? It's like you believe that you know everything about everything. Because to say to someone, do that, that implies that you know everything that's going to happen in the process after they've done that. So how do you know that them doing that is the right thing?
Right, exactly.
Because we don't understand the whole process. So I think we have to be really careful with advice. I think simple things, you know, like I always give the example, if you're walking down the street and you've got responsibility for a little child and the child starts running off towards the road and you say, come back, you know, onto the sidewalk or the pavement, you know, that kind of stuff is fairly obvious, isn't it? But, you know, as we start to get older and things start to become a lot more complex, I think we have to be very, very conscious and careful about advice. And for me, I don't give advice very often. I share my opinion, you know, I think that can be okay. You know, I have this opinion, but rather than, you know, do this or do that, because spiritually unhelpful.
Right. And your opinion comes from you. It's a nice statement. Whereas advice is laying a trip on somebody else, you know, so there is a difference. You know, interesting you should bring that up, because the three next guidelines, and we're running out of time, but each one is got a similar tone to it, because you use communicate selectively, skillfully, do only what needs to be done, harmoniously obtain and retain only what you need. In other words, it sounds like you're self-limiting here, but what you're saying is it doesn't have to be a scattershot thing, right? Less is more sometimes, you know. Like we said, if we're endlessly giving advice, I know a lot, I want to share it, you know, that's not really helpful, it's not skillful. Sometimes we have to refrain, you know. We speak more in our silence sometimes than we do when we're shuntering on, you know, for hours. So I like that. You know, there's a sense of, I don't have to have it all. You know, I think there's a tendency in our society to, I want to eat more, I want to have sex more, I want to have more spiritual experiences, et cetera, et cetera. I want to, you know, go around the world and experience all this. I want to get on a zip line. And, you know, it's not all about that, is it? Sometimes saying no, not doing something, could be more profound.
Yeah, what I'm encouraging people to do with the guidelines is just obtain the stuff that they really need.
Right.
And no more. It's just one side of it. And then the other side of it is about the activities that we get involved in. Because I know that for a lot of people, they have a lot more than they need, and they do a lot more than they need to do. And not only do they have more than they need, and do more than they need to do, they then complain about the stress that's causing them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because it doesn't work. It's really interesting when you look at all the activities that you're doing. I talk about this guidelines, people, and they sometimes say, oh, well, I don't know what I can let go of. I don't know what I can stop doing. So then I say to them, okay, well, why don't you tell me some of the things that you do which you know are causing your others harm, or things that are unskillful? And for most of us, when we look at the things that we do each day, and you can even take this to the level of thought, actually. One of the guys that comes to one of my group pointed this out. He said, oh, I like this guideline, Darren. Do only what needs to be done. Because, yeah, even with your thinking, you don't need to think as much as you think you do.
Right, exactly.
You know? And what that then creates when you follow these guidelines is that it creates more space, and it creates more stillness, and it creates more simplicity. And, you know, when you have less stuff, for most people, you don't need to work as much, or your job doesn't need to be as complex to pay for the stuff, and you don't need to take all the time maintaining the stuff. I know that there is a level of complexity that we need to accept culturally these days, But I believe that many people can live far more simply than they are at the moment, with all the different things they've got all over the place, not just in the home, but people have got assets, you know, these days all over the world.
Right, exactly.
Not just physical assets. You know, it's the same with digital assets, isn't it? You know,
right.
How much stuff we create online that again, we have to maintain and we have to do stuff with. And there's no end to it, really. And the interesting thing is culturally, and especially with the economy and all the businesses, they encourage you to obtain more and to do more because it drives their business and then drives the economy. So all of that is working against where we need to be going spiritually. So it's an almighty force to resist. And then you're looking around at people you know, people you work with and friends, and they're experiencing this or that, and they're getting all this extra stuff, and then, you know, you get envious and jealous of them, because I do that. I try to maintain a simple life, but then I might go somewhere and see someone else's place or their car, or look on their Facebook profile and look at all the things that they're doing. And even although I know that I'm actually living in the right way, my ego then says, oh, you need to be doing that. You're getting that behind. You know what? Yeah, look at this person, everything that they're doing and everything that they've got. And so then what I start to do is my ego then compares myself to these other people. And then I feel I'm falling short in some way. And I have to come back and remind myself, no, Darren, you know, you're actually living in the right way. And these guidelines help me with that.
Excellent. Yeah, very good. Well, very honest. Folks, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll have a final word with Darren. Next week, Texas Christian University Professor of Religion, Darren Middleton, who actually grew up in Nottingham, which is where I think Darren Coben grew up, right?
That's right.
He joins me to talk about his book on the it's in the Literary Portals to Prayer series, where he presents 50 prayer starters, comparing a writing from the author George Eliot with a biblical passage from the modern Message Bible. So that should be good. Darren's been on my show many times. Wonderful guy. He's an expert in Rastafarianism, among other things, and he always brings the joy to our show. But right now, I want to talk for another couple hours, Darren, because we've only just scratched the surface of this book. But you'll have to come back on, and we'll talk some more.
Yeah, that would be great. And when you speak to the other Darren, because that show sounds really interesting, ask him how it all fits in with Robin Hood. He'll know what
Yeah,
means.
There we go. Oh, yeah, of course. Nottingham Forest and all that.
Yeah,
got it. All right. So thank you, Darren, for being on the show.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, really great connecting with you. And, you know, I love our discussions because I appreciate the interviews about my book and what I've got in the book, but I always learn quite a lot, you know, when you and I talk like this. So, yeah. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.